Thank you for joining Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield. As John Hay, one of the most famous men of the 19th century, once said, all the great prizes in life are just around the corner. Let's go there together.
Hi, I'm Dennis Mansfield. Welcome to Just Around the Corner. It's an honor to have you with us on each episode. And so for today, I'm going to take a different angle, a different tack, because my guest is a Right Reverend Pastor Milton Marquez.
Hey.
Did I get that right?
I'm not sure, but we'll go with it. It's all good.
You know, Milton, I really, from the time I was a kid, watched movies, and, and we're going to talk a little bit about entertainment today in your life and what you do with, with one of your two podcasts. But I always remembered seeing pastors or ministers coming on the screen, and they're... It was almost like there were otherworldly beings. Does that make sense?
Sure. I mean, they're supposed to have some kind of angle or corner on some spiritual
power,
you know, that's available to them. You know, they cast out demons and they, you know, heal people or whatever. I haven't done that in a while, so I'm not sure.
It's true. That is how pastors are perceived.
Yeah.
Now, the other side of it is that people who do not go to church and do not have a relationship with a pastor will only see from entertainment, television, or film, what they think a pastor does or doesn't do.
Yeah.
And so when we stop and go, wait a minute. Let's put all that stuff aside, which is what we're going to do today. And we're going to find out from you, from your past, your background, your personal background as well, ultimately why you got into the pastorate and how you became both a minister and a chaplain. Start with your family. I want to hear about your wife and kids.
So my wife, Denise, we've been married for 26 years. So a long time. She's a physical therapist. We met in college. She was going to PT school. I was going to the seminary, or about to go into the seminary. And yeah, so met there, fell in love, did the whole, you know, beautiful thing.
How long did you date?
But we dated for a year, and that's then I asked her to marry me, and then we dated another 8 months, and then got married.
Long time, get to know each other.
Yeah. I mean, we knew each other before that. We were friends. You know, we went to church together, but you know, we weren't officially dating until.
Did she know that you wanted to be a pastor?
Yeah, for sure.
Right up front, she said.
Yeah, which is an interesting part of the story because her father was a pastor. So she grew up in that world, and she actually saw that world as a negative thing.
Oh, okay.
So she heard her father was kind of like a big deal in Mexico, southern Mexico.
Oh, really?
To the point of being one of those pastors that had to be gone a lot, you know, because had major responsibilities overseeing the whole southern part of Mexico.
How unfortunate all the churches. Her childhood.
Yeah, she... I remember her telling the story of just seeing her dad, you know, kind of taking off, getting in the car, driving away, and her little brother, Peter, at the big window in front of the house, just crying, Daddy, don't leave, don't leave. Oh, that was kind of the image of her. So she never wanted to marry a pastor.
Oh, my goodness.
So I don't know. I must have been just so hot that she decided to forego and go for it anyway.
I think I would have said hot and humble.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
But isn't it interesting? Because oftentimes in entertainment, they'll present a pastor as being too busy with the work of the cloth, whatever that means, to take care of the Peters standing at the window saying, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy.
Yeah. And that's not too far from the truth. And I'm not saying that's a good thing. It just it's a reality that many ministers, pastors have had to face. We're getting better at it, having, you know, drawing those lines and being willing to let the church figure things out without the pastor having to have his hand in everything.
In every micromanaging, et cetera.
And that's actually a learning process for both the pastor and the church, because the church gets to the point where it relies on the pastor when it shouldn't.
Correct.
And the pastor gets to the point where he has his hands in places he shouldn't as well. So there's almost a dual learning process that has to happen. And I'll admit, it's taken me a long time to get to the place, and I still find myself wanting to jump in where I shouldn't.
And then you personally have to physically stop.
You have to remind yourself.
Bring in the reins and go, no, not going to do it.
Well, and it's mostly come through failure and humility.
Explain that.
So you have the best intentions. So you go into a situation, I'll give you an idea. In my church that I pastor now, The Experience, there was a gap in youth ministry. So we don't have any leaders in youth ministry. So I'm like, okay, this is the year. We're going to focus on youth ministry. We're going to put resources and money. I'm going to function as the youth pastor, and I'm going to go in there. I'm going to find assistants, and we're going to go dive in head first. And we did. We did for a whole year. And at the end of that year, we had no youth leaders.
Oh, my.
And we had gotten to know some of the young people, but we didn't generate any real momentum.
No buzz.
The youth were happy. Like, sure. You know, we did a few fun things, but it just didn't go anywhere. And now, almost a year later from that experiment, now I actually have three people who are getting together, and they're saying, we're going to, and I didn't ask them to, I didn't push in any way, I didn't twist any arms. They just said, we're going to jump in, and we're going to get things going. And all I tell them, like, just give me your plan.
Yeah.
And then I'll take it to my executive team and we'll get you a budget. And they're excited to do it. So it's that part where I'm like, oh, I tried to do this and it didn't work. Yeah. Now these people are going to try to do it. It's going to work. And I got to be okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Now think about it. You're speaking to somebody that's listening right now, or watching, that they don't go to church. Mm-hmm. This is all inside baseball lingo.
Sure.
And they're thinking, I don't really like baseball, so I don't really get that. I do too. And I love church. Which for someone else, they're saying, I don't even know what church is.
Yeah.
I remember in the town that I live in, there's a Masonic lodge.
Ooh.
A Shriner type lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going by with a friend of mine saying, I wonder what goes on in there.
Yeah.
What do they do? I know they wear the fezes. I know they help crippled kids because that's what they call them. It's not a pejorative term. It's what they call it. And I don't know. And I wonder what part of our American culture drives by our churches and the equivalent says, well, I know they wear fezes and they do this, but I really don't know.
Yeah.
And so for that person, why in the world did you choose to make your career in something that a lot of people know nothing about?
Well, the honest answer is I felt called to it. Now, what does even that mean? Mm-hmm. So I believe as a Christian that everyone has a purpose in life. Mm-hmm. You know, you were called. Your purpose is to help people. Mm-hmm. You help people through your coaching, and you help business leaders, and when I see you doing that, mm-hmm. I can see that you were designed to do that.
Wow.
Right? I was designed to do this. Now I didn't know that, and not everybody knows their purpose. In fact, it's one of the big missing pieces in our society. People need to discover their purpose. The problem is we just don't know how many times. Mm-hmm. And so my purpose, I thought for a long time, was to make money.
Yeah.
So I was going to be a computer scientist and design computer programming and be at the edge of technology and all that stuff. And at one point, through a huge failure scholastically, is where I realized this isn't what I'm meant to do. It's not what I'm meant to be. But I still didn't know what
that,
it was.
That had to be so powerfully painful.
It was.
For you.
It was painful for several reasons. One is I come from a pretty humble background. My parents came from South America, from Uruguay, immigrated to the United States. My mom got, while we were there, she got her associates in accounting, so she began. But I was going to be my parents were, it's kind of the way it worked back then, like one family member comes to the States and then they can, if they get their citizenship, they could start sponsoring the rest of the family. So my family was that initial, you know, that initial couple that came. And I was going to be, and I'm the firstborn. So I was going to be like that first, like kid from this journey of immigrating to the United States. I'm going to be the first kid to go to college and to graduate and to get a job and all that kind of stuff. So there I am failing. And so there's the pain of the, just the shame of what I bring to my family. And then of course the pain of just like, what do I do with the rest of my life? Like where I thought I was going seemed cool. Now that doesn't seem like it's going to happen. Well, now what? So all I did was after that failure, go back to school, refocus myself and just do what's in front of me. Like, so I have classes, I have a community, I'm going to change, because it was all based on life decisions. I didn't fail because I wasn't smart enough. It was just, this is the life I chose. It led me to failure. So I'm going to change that. I'm going to change the people I hang out with. I'm going to change the decisions I make. And it was in that new community where my purpose started to be revealed through conversation, through trying different things that now bring joy and energy into my life. And ultimately, someone said, have you ever thought of being a pastor? And I said, no, no, I hadn't thought about that. And that conversation,
nor had my mother or father.
No, and that conversation just took me to the next step, to the next step, and then it was revealed that this is what you're meant to do. And the final moment or sign was, I'll apply to the seminary. You know, I'll graduate with a degree in computer science, and then I'll apply to the seminary, which isn't the normal way to go to seminary. And if they accept me, Lord, then I'll know this is where you want me.
Interesting.
And there you go. That's the
story. So you became a pastor. You also became a chaplain.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the two?
In a standard chaplaincy usually happens like in a hospital situation. So chaplains are those people who are there to support people who are in dire need of spiritual care. And of course, in the hospital, people who are on their deathbeds, people who are struggling through losing limbs or losing a family member. So, but I don't do that kind of chaplaincy. That's the standard. You have military chaplains as well who care for the our soldiers and give them spiritual care. I give spiritual care at a media company, which is weird.
Explain that, because obviously you wear it on your chest.
I do. So KTSY is one of the radio stations that is part of our media company, Barefoot Media Ministries. And basically my job is to give spiritual care first, maybe not first, but in one aspect, the staff here. So there's about 14 of us on the team. It continues to grow. So, you know, sit with people, pray with them. How can I support you? How can I help you? This job gets very challenging at times. There's a lot of energy, not wasted, but used up here, emotional energy, spiritual energy, physical energy. So to be there to support and help. Of course, I do the grunt work too that's necessary. I'm also on that level of the team. And then spiritual care for listeners. I get emails and phone calls from listeners, people who watch our podcasts, and they need help, and we pray for them, we talk to them. I've met a few in person. Sometimes we provide resources. I've delivered water and gasoline and food and gas cards and you know, whatever resources we can provide for them. I also see my job as a liaison in the community, helping all of our spiritual entities, our churches, our nonprofits, to find a way for all of us to work together towards the building of the kingdom. So meeting with other church pastors, and we have a church plant that's happening next month that we want to get the word out and let people know, like, if you're looking for a church, there's one opening here in this town. Check it out. There's good people there.
So for the person that doesn't understand church language, a plant is a franchise?
Kind of, yes. A new church.
A new opportunity. And they've got links to your church.
Yeah.
And so you almost like a daughter or a son church.
Yeah, pretty okay. much. Yeah. Now, sometimes someone comes in cold, right? Yeah. And is not connected to a local, but sometimes it's a sponsored thing, like you said.
Well, you mentioned podcasts. Mm-hmm. You also do two podcasts.
I do, yeah.
And, you know, in preparation, as we were chatting, I was actually deeply surprised that one of them is on the issue of entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Finding Good.
Finding Good.
Is the name of that podcast. Mm-hmm. And that's available on all platforms.
That's right.
You and Kevin McNeese do that. And so tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's part of my responsibility of creating spiritual content as well. I see that as part of my job. So what we do is we'll take a popular film or something that's a streaming service, a show, and we'll dive deeper into it, find some of those positive spiritual themes, and then just build on those and allow those to give us some insight on how to find good in the world. It's getting a little bit harder each and every day, it seems well, like.
Do you remember, do you recall the most recent one that you did?
I know that one that always comes to my mind because we had a great response to it. There's a show on Netflix called Stranger Things that just had its, whenever you watch this, you know, it had its third season or fourth, I don't remember. But we talked about the reality of, I think it was how we support one another through the challenges, because that shows a lot about there's these awful things happening, yes, and the kids come together to kind of battle through that. And we just got a mom who they just moved into the area, somehow landed on this and watched it with her family. They actually watched it together.
Really?
Yeah, and she said, you know what? Our family's been going through so many challenges and we needed to hear what you guys were talking about, and just how they had gotten to a conversation based on what they heard us talking about.
So the application went far from just entertaining.
Oh, absolutely.
To changing,
yeah.
And, wow.
And yeah, taking those themes that, you know, we sit and we watch these things and we just walk away saying, oh, that was fun or it wasn't.
Sure.
But there are things in there that if we focus on them, they can make a difference.
Well, I really applaud you because throughout Just Around the Corner, mm-hmm. our podcast in season one and season two, I would bring on Meg Rowe, and we would talk about movies with Meg.
Nice.
We're considering adding that in.
Oh, that's great.
Again, but for the purpose of challenging people to look at things maybe that they hadn't thought about in viewing something, and then to deal with it. I have an ongoing conversation with Mrs. Rowe about the fact that she hates It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, and really?
Like, what human being on the face of the earth hates that? But I get it. And so we discussed that.
Yeah.
I love it. And the life lessons from those kinds of older films, sometimes it's just, that's an old black and white, and I don't like it. But sometimes it's just a meaning about, you know, I mean, my heavens, the sadness of It's a Wonderful Life, when overlaid on someone's life, could draw them to a conclusion that it's all hopeless.
Right.
But, you know, you talk about that, and that's your entertainment, but you also have a spiritual conversations.
Yeah.
One that's called Wake Up, Live.
Wake Up, Live, yeah.
And it's with musical artists.
Right.
How do you address hope through those artists as you do in terms of entertainment?
Yeah, with the artists, the goal of that podcast is to try to dive deep but also practically into the spiritual journey. So Wake Up, Live is season two of Wake Up, Die. And Wake Up Die was one artist where we talked with Zonti. He's a white rapper, and the world that he lives in is a world of people who don't know a lot about church, about mm-hmm. about Jesus. They're not even sure about the language. And what we wanted to do was, we know that Jesus is the answer to so much of what we're going through right now. Yeah. But how do we bring that into a language that a person who has no church background can be drawn to it, right. and can really bring it into their lives and apply it? So that's what we hit with him. So we want to, in season two, we want to continue that, but do it with other artists, because these artists, we just see them on stage, yeah. right? And we see yeah. them jumping around and saying their thing, but they're real people, and mm-hmm. they have their own challenges in living this life of an artist. So we want to get to the practical and the real part of their own journey. So we just finished a couple of episodes with Roy Tosh, and we've got other artists that we're lining up. So hopefully soon we'll be releasing those episodes. Good. And we've gotten such great feedback of people who said, man, I really needed to hear this. The way you guys put that made it so understandable.
Wonderful.
And we feel like people are being introduced to Jesus who wouldn't have been through these conversations.
So here's your life. Mm-hmm. You're a pastor, you're a chaplain, you're a podcaster with two shows mm-hmm. with multiple years now, with episodes that are always happening.
Yeah.
You're using content to reach out and touch people's lives. Could I take all of that and bring it into one issue that is common to our culture?
Okay.
Which is the issue of marriage.
Okay.
And I'd be curious for our listeners and our viewers to find from you hope in a world where 50% of marriages that happen end up in divorce, yeah. both within and outside of the church. Yeah. What is it that you do as a pastor that helps people stay together?
Yeah. Well, definitely, first of all, I have to make sure that I'm intentionally working hard at my own marriage.
Yes.
Because my marriage, I stand up at my church, I preach, it's live streamed, it's on the internet. And then, of course, I have these platforms that I use. And I have to make sure that the picture that I'm painting of what marriage can be is first of all true,
yeah.
and is positive.
Yes.
Doesn't mean that my wife and I don't have our own times of challenge.
Sure.
But can I express in my interactions with my wife forgiveness, understanding, listening, all the things that are very crucial to that. So that's the first thing. Make sure that your marriage is growing. Uh-huh. Number one. And then, of course, be what's the right word? Be, when it comes to this, maybe I'll just express it and then sure. maybe you get the sure. word. I am extremely aggressive about keeping marriages together. When someone comes to me and says, either we're thinking about getting married or we are married and we're having challenges, I might drop everything.
Really?
I'm to that
focused.
Point. I'm very focused. I say, okay, let's get you guys talking. If you're going to get married, let's get together and let's start having good conversations about what your expectations
that's
are,
terrific.
Where you're going, what you should be working on, what you should be talking about. So that's number one. And then if your marriage is having a problem, let's get together. Because and look, it doesn't always work.
Sure.
I've had couples that have divorced. And we would want to reverse that, right? We want to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Sure.
But I've had others that, I mean, you sit there for hours talking and yeah. listening and analyzing, and I'm watching the body language, and so I tell them, we're gonna fight.
Yeah.
We're gonna fight. We're gonna pray. We're gonna do everything in our power. And if you make the commitment to get in this fight with me, I will commit to fight with you.
Yeah.
until the very end.
On behalf of your marriage.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's what I do. So it's really just getting people together and hashing it out, mm-hmm. talking things out. Because I don't think there's any problem that with good, honest conversation and the power of God involved, yeah. there isn't any situation that can't be worked through. Yeah. Even infidelity.
Yeah.
I've seen that,
yeah.
you know, and pornography, bankruptcy, you know, mother-in-law issues. We can get that figured out. But it takes work. That's the first thing I tell them. Like, forget what you watch on TV.
Yes.
Forget what you see in Hollywood.
Yes.
I'm not going to say that one sentence that's, you had me at hello. That moment isn't happening. This is work.
That is a scripted, orchestrated response.
That's not going to happen.
Mm-mm. Well, I know as we come in for a landing, Milton, your heart is for people.
Absolutely.
But that's really not the focus. That it goes to people, but your heart is for God. Mm-hmm. And through God, it works. I've been watching you now for years, and I've been so impressed with the fact that you're the most unlikely reverend I've ever met. I mean,
I take that as a compliment, by the way.
I mean, you've got the best soul patch I've ever seen in my life. And and your sense of humor and your ability to reach out and grab people who would see a pastor and they'd go, no, wait a minute, he's a pastor? And the point is, yeah, because what you're doing is you're a man of God,
yes.
you love God, you love Christ, mm-hmm. he's completely changed your life.
Yes.
And because of that, you're sharing that mm-hmm. with others. It's like a beggar who finds out that there's free bread, though it costs somebody else a lot of money, that can go to all the other beggars and bring them in to say, this expensive bread has been purchased for you. Mm. And when we see ourselves in that way, as you see yourself and as I see myself, I think it's engaging. Speak to the folks about how they can get that if they don't have that hope now.
Yeah. Hope comes through connection. When you can get plugged in to a community, to a people that also are seeking that out, you can find that. You can get it. The people who are trying to find that on their own are going to find they're going to find a version of it that isn't real.
Yes.
It's a fake version of hope. Yeah. It's temporary. It's not long lasting. This is why marriages, relationships are so important, because they're the building blocks I talk about church, but it's the building block of society. And if that breaks down, there is no hope. So we have to learn to come back together. I know we've been separated for a long time, and the world is only trying to separate us more.
Absolutely.
It's trying to draw lines between us, put fences up between us, and we've got to tear those down and say, no, I don't care. Connection is the key. That's the theme of our church. It's the theme of what we do here at the media company. We're trying to bring people together to God and to each other. Simple as that. So that's where your hope.
It's not easy.
No.
But it is simple.
It's simple, and here's where I'm learning something that was profound to me. I'm sure it's not going to be profound to you. That kind of connectivity, that kind of connection happens naturally.
Yes.
You don't have to try to do that.
No.
What you have to try to do is get all the things that get in the way of that out of the way.
Yes.
So eliminate the barriers to connection. Yeah. And a lot of those barriers live in here. So if I work on me, mm-hmm. right, and you work on you, mm-hmm. we're just going to connect, right? And if we create the environment that there isn't anything stopping us from connecting,
that's exactly right.
I tell the people at my church, don't get in the way of people naturally connecting to God and
that's
other
wonderful.
People.
Well, I know this. that you have not gotten in the way of God.
Praise the Lord. Thank you.
And as a longtime friend and someone that I have a great respect for,
thank you.
I don't think I've ever, in the three seasons of all the episodes I've done, I actually sat down and started out with the right reverend, because you are the right man of God. Mm. You're a man who loves God. And ladies and gentlemen, I would end this very short and hopefully sweet episode with the reality.
Hang on a second. I lost one of the cameras, and I'm going to come in and turn it back on, and then we'll do the closing.
Okay, cool. I heard the click. I thought maybe something had happened.
The battery pack?
Was that everything else fine except for the, I lost this camera, which... So, from here on out, Dennis, just go ahead and...
Give the close.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You have just start off with how in your three seasons, this is the first time you've done the pastor. And then we'll pick it up.
And I'll just go straight.
Yeah, straight into that
And then we'll close at that.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you don't have to, I mean, you can still talk like, I just want to get that transition of smoothness of you talking about three seasons.
Okay, got it.
Okay. And then go into the close and talk in the center.
Okay. This fly is still around.
Oh my gosh.
I love Jesus, but I hate flies.
All right, and whenever you're ready, Dennis.
Okay. You know, Milton, in the three seasons that just around the corner has been produced and gone all over the world, I don't believe I ever started a show with the right reverend.
That would have been a little weird.
That would have been pretty strange. But you know what? You it's not that you're a reverend. Mm. It's that you're a man who loves God and is loved by God.
Mm. Amen.
And it is that sweetness that I hope and pray in this episode, ladies and gentlemen, that you capture, that each of us have the opportunity to show our love for others if we realize that God loved us first. Mm-hmm. And it's in that sense that though you can have hope in systems and marriage encounters and all these other things, the real object of your hope has got to be faith in God through Jesus Christ.
Amen.
Anything other than that is going to leave you wanting. In fact, I end with this short sort of example. My wife Susan and I happened to bump into a couple who were headed down to Arizona. We live in the Pacific Northwest, and we asked them about their life, and they were very clear that they didn't have community and didn't really care to have community, so they could move around and have versatility of experiences. Well, as I sat there and listened to them, I realized the versatility of experiences was the same experience done over and over and over in different locales. And it was an emptiness and brokenness and a disconnectedness. And I would encourage you, if that's the spiel you're saying in your life, that you just like to travel, be unconnected, you're missing out. And you have seen in Milton Marquez a pastor, a chaplain, a podcaster, a man who cares about people deeply, loves them, that pastors are all around us. Go to the church near you. Knock on the door. Go in and meet the pastor. If he's not there, go to another church.
Right.
But the body of Christ is all around us. And the only aspect of how we can further our faith is to be in community. You can't do it. One coal on a fire burns out. Mm-hmm. But all the other coals keep it flowing. So Milton, thank you for being on our show today and in this episode. It's great to be your friend.
Same
it's great
here.
To see you change life. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today.